Amen. And thank God for this wonderful opportunity. Certainly want to say thank you to my friend, my sister, Dr. Myra, Pastor Myra. God bless you. It's an honor to be serving on your behalf and at your call. At any time you call, in the words of Michael Jackson, I will be there. What a wonderful opportunity that God has given us and made possible for us, even with the coronavirus, the pandemic, the quarantines that we've had. Maybe doors have been closed in ways that we thought and knew not of, but God is still with us, and the church rolls on. I'm happy to have the opportunity to speak on today, especially on the subject that I think is very important for us in such a time as this. I was born in Memphis in 1964, 501 Pontotoc, Apartment C. Now, don't think too good of that. That was the ghetto. I didn't know it then, but when I go back home and I look at the place where I was born in the ghetto, downtown Memphis. I remember vividly in 1968 running down the steps following my mom, my dad, my brothers, my sisters, and hundreds of people across the streets from the community, from the neighborhood. They all gathered in the middle of the street to watch helicopters flying in the air, to watch and listen to the police cars as they were zooming at that time down to the Lorraine Motel, which I did not know at that time that's what it was. I remember at 4 years old, standing downstairs, holding on to my mom's leg as I watched people run to what I later came to know was the Lorraine Motel. Dr. King had been assassinated. He came to town at the request of Pastor Myra, who became mentors of mine, Dr. Samuel Billy Cowles, Dr. James Netters, whom we just eulogized about 3 weeks ago in Memphis at the age of 93. Dr. King would have been 92, his birthday. They invited Dr. King to come to town to help with what was going on and the problems in Memphis, the sanitation department, the sanitation workers. The black sanitation workers, if you will, were on strike. They were striking, and Dr. King, against the odds and having been warned and pleaded with to not go into Memphis because of the threats that were on his life, at the invitation of Dr. Netters and Dr. Samuel Billy Cowles, he came because Dr. King was concerned more about people and equality and civil rights than he was his own life. He came into Memphis and was preparing to speak and to help the sanitation workers. They were not striking for more money. They were not striking for better jobs. They were striking for benefits. The black sanitation workers wanted the same rights that the white sanitation workers had. In those days, they were not called sanitation workers, they were called garbage men. And the black garbage men had to carry their pails of garbage on their heads. And they were fighting and striking because they wanted good pails that did not leak like the others. And they wanted to be able to go into a facility after work and take showers and be able to go home fresh to their families, because when they carried garbage on their heads in those pails, the pails were rusted with holes, and the liquids and fluids from the garbage pails would run down the black sanitation workers, the black garbage men's clothes, down their necks, down into their clothes. And they wanted to be able, they really only wanted to be able to go home clean to their families the way they left. And it was at that time Dr. King came to speak, and of course we know that he was assassinated on the porch of the Lorraine Motel. Well, Samuel Billy Cowles, who passed about 2 years ago, Dr. King was prepared after the what would have been a speech to go to his house for dinner. One of the most interesting things that Dr. Cowles told me about that incident was people looked at Dr. King as supernatural. They didn't look at him as a natural man. They didn't look at him as ordinary, because so many extraordinary things took place as a result of his nonviolent approach. When Dr. King fell from that bullet, he actually had a pack of cigarettes in his pocket. But nobody outside of his circle knew that he even smoked a cigarette. And when Billy Cowles reached down while they were calling the ambulance and while other men were pointing that the bullet came from that direction, Samuel Billy Cowles reached into his pockets and got his cigarettes out, because they did not want the headline news to be Dr. King smoked cigarettes. If you go to Memphis right now, you can go to the Lorraine Motel that has become the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, and the room that Dr. King was in still has the ashtray. It still has the ashes and the cigarettes that Dr. King was using. Well, Dr. King was just an amazing person, and in the numerous of speeches that he gave a speech about the other America. And Dr. King says that, as he talked about the other America, he says, in a sense, the other America. There are two Americas. One America was the America that was overflowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey of opportunity. Dr. King said that America was the habitat of millions of people who had food and material necessities for their bodies, their culture and education for their minds, and freedom and human dignity for their spirits. Dr. King said, in that America, millions of people experience every day the opportunity of having life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. From every dimension, Dr. King says, in that America, people were able to live the American dream. Dr. King said that in this America that he spoke of, millions of young people grew up in the sunlight of opportunity. And then he said, tragically, there is another America. And he said, this America has a daily ugliness about it that constantly transform the opportunities of hope into the fatigue of despair. He said, in this America, millions of starved men walk the streets daily in search of jobs that did not exist. Interestingly enough, Pastor Brown, that message was written in 1967, but it so applies to us in 2021. He says, in this America, millions of people find themselves living in rat-infested, vermin-filled slums. I know it seems like that's maybe ridiculous for us who live in and the way we live, live where we live, the way we live. He says, in a sense, the greatest tragedy of all for this other America is what it would do to our young children. People of various backgrounds live in this other America. He says some were Mexican Americans, some were Puerto Ricans, some were Indians, some happened to be from the other groups, some were other groups, but the largest group in this other America, Dr. King says, was the American Negro. And King said to deal with the problem, he wanted to deal with the problem because he wanted to see this America become one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now, let me tell you something. If you think that we are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all in 2021, if you think that we are all right now because we can go into the same restaurants and sit down and order our food just like those in the other America, if you think that we're living in one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all because we can live in the same neighborhoods and because we can drive similar cars and because we can go downstairs in the theaters now and because we can drive the buses and own the restaurants, if you think that we have overcome, let me remind you of where we still are. We are in an America where Rayshard Brooks, 27, in Atlanta, falls asleep in his car and is awakened and killed by a white policeman. We're in an America where Daniel Prude, just up the road, 41, in here, Rochester, put in a spit bag, handcuffed, head forced into asphalt pavement by white men until he died. George Floyd, over a fake $20 bill in Minneapolis, was held down by a white policeman with a knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. If you think that we live in one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, let me tell you, Breonna Taylor, in Louisville, Kentucky, was in her bed asleep and awakened by a white man and killed, where Oprah bought all of the billboards saying something has got to be done. Did you see in August the march on Washington where Black Lives Matter staged the peaceful protest in Washington? Did you see how this past summer the peaceful protesters, Black Lives Matter, Black America to be specific, were tear gassed, pepper sprayed, rubber bulleted out to clear the way for President Trump, yes, he's the president, for President Trump to have a photo op in front of the church. You did see that. Well, did you see last week how white America, who went up to the Capitol, not peacefully, not protesting, but rioting, breaking out windows in the U.S. Capitol. Did you see that? Did you see how few policemen were on duty even after being informed and having the intelligence that this protest would take place? Did you see how they broke into Mama Nancy's office, took pictures at Mama Nancy's desk with their feet on Mama Nancy's desk? Did you see how white policemen were so enthralled with the excitement of white rioters that they even took selfies with them? It's two Americas. It's one where white America can get close enough to the United States Capitol to break out windows, go inside, take their seat, and sit right down. In the other America, Black Lives Matter can't even get close to the Capitol without rubber bullets, pepper balls, and tear gas. Well, we say all lives matter. All Lives Matter was born out of Black Lives Matter. This is a slogan. Black Lives Matter is simply a slogan and a social movement in response to racism and violence perpetuated against black people both in the past and now and in the future. It traces back to February 2012, 17-year-old black man Trayvon Martin walking home in Florida after buying Skittles and a can of tea. A local resident, white man, George Zimmerman, reported Martin to the police. Why, I don't know. He's just walking. But he reports him to the police. The police say, I got it, but George Zimmerman takes it into his own hands, kills him, and gets off for self-defense. Well, after this, the hashtag Black Lives Matter began to appear on social media in support of Martin and in protests against social and systemic racism. This grew into a movement, concerns and anger about racism towards black people was reinvigorated more recently after several high-profile racially charged incidents happened again in this country. 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery, a black man who was shot while jogging in South Georgia. Those tragic events inspired worldwide protests against institutional racism. All lives matter. What does it mean to say all lives matter? When the Black Lives Matter motto arose, some people, and I got to be honest with you, I was one of them, who interpreted the phrase as confrontational, who interpreted the phrase as divisive. But guess what? When you learn better, do better. The phrase all lives matter sprang up in response to argue all lives are equal. Really? Because we all are human beings. Really? Black Lives Matter does not mean that other lives do not matter. In a world where black people are stigmatized, in a world where black people are marginalized and discriminated against, Black Lives Matter simply recognizes that black lives matter too. Responding to Black Lives Matter with all lives matter, what that does is derail the specific conversations about racism and about black people that we must continue to have until we become one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All lives matter. All lives matter. It dismisses, it ignores, it denies that the problems do exist. It denies racism. It denies discrimination. It says that what we saw in Washington with white people was the same as what we saw in Washington with black people. It says people are people. Really? And if people were people, we wouldn't be having the services that we're having this weekend. If people were people, we wouldn't have black men scared, me being one of them too, every time a white policeman get behind us in our cars. If people were people, black America would not have been tear gassed off the Capitol while white Americans were damn near welcomed into Aunt Nancy's house. This is why Dr. King quotes Frederick Douglass, who said, emancipation for the Negro is freedom to hunger. Emancipation, Frederick Douglass says, emancipation for the Negro is freedom without riots to cover their heads, without roofs to cover their heads, freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate. Douglass said, you got freedom and famine at the same time. And Dr. King said riots, and I agree, he says, are socially destructive and self-defeating. Dr. King said that nonviolence is the most potent weapon that we could ever use, that the oppressed people in their struggle could ever use for freedom and justice. President Trump, he's still the president, said the only way to be heard is you gotta fight like hell. And fight like hell, they did. We gotta condemn riots. We gotta condemn riots. And we gotta affirm that there is another way. We must condemn also the conditions that causes a person to feel that they must engage in riotous activities. Riots, Dr. King says, do not develop out of the thin air. He says, riots are simply the voices of or the language of the unheard. Oh my goodness, he says, Dr. King says, in the final analysis, a riot is that language. And he says, what it is America has just failed to hear. It's failed to hear that the plight of the Negro has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have just not been met. It has failed to hear that the large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and status quo than the justice and equality of humanity. And so in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And Dr. King says, as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having the recurrences of violence, the recurrences of riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. So, my brothers and sisters, here we are, up on another inauguration. And so, President-elect Biden, if you deal with the problem and not just gloat about having picked a beautiful black woman as your sidekick, if you deal with the problem, we can become one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Not just brag, boast, and say how good it is that you selected a black woman, a beautiful black woman, as your sidekick. White men have always loved beautiful black women. How you think I got this color? I didn't get this from Africa. If you want to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, there are certain things that just must be done. You just got to know. You just got to know that black lives matter too. Black lives matter too. Black lives matter too. Thank you.